The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 9, Text 9, given by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, recorded on December 23rd, 2001 in Mumbai.
Vaishnavamscha. Nunam vimushta matayasthavam mayayate. Yetvam bhavapyaya vimoksha ramanya heto. Archanti kalpakatarum kunapapa bhogyam. Itchanti yat sparshadradam naraye pinirnam. Persons who worship you simply for the sense gratification of this bag of skin are certainly influenced by your illusory energy. In spite of having you, who are like a desire tree and are the cause of liberation from birth and death, foolish persons such as me desire benedictions from you for sense gratification, which is available even for those who live in hellish conditions. Purport by His Divine Grace, Esi Bhaktivedan Swami Prabhupada. Dhruva Maharaj repented because he had come to the Lord to render devotional service for material profit. He here condemns his attitude. Only due to gross lack of knowledge does one worship the Lord for material profit or for sense gratification. The Lord is like a desire tree. Anyone can have whatever he desires from the Lord. But people in general do not know what kind of benediction they should ask from him. Happiness derived from the touch of skin or sensuous happiness is present in the life of hogs and dogs. Such happiness is very insignificant. If a devotee worships the Lord for such insignificant happiness, he must be considered devoid of all knowledge. Srila Dhruva Maharaj is honestly revealing his heart to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This honesty is an essential element for one who is calling upon the mercy of the Lord. When we cry out for mercy, one of the greatest disqualifications is to consider that we have qualifications. Mercy is given to those who feel bereft of the proper credibility to receive that mercy. Thus, Queen Kunti prayed that Krishna is akinchana gocharam. He is very much pleased to be the property of those who feel themselves impoverished. As long as we are under the illusion that we possess anything of value, then Krishna will just let us go on with those possessions until its temporary nature frustrates us. And then we become attached to something else until that object's temporary nature frustrates us. Birth after birth after birth, we continue through this process. For a self-realized soul, it is amazing. Only by the inconceivable power of Maya can people remain in such an illusion. They work so hard to claim some sort of proprietorship. It may be on the gross or subtle level. We become proud of our abilities, of our fame and distinction, of our social position. Or we become proud of our wealth, our estate, our family. And all of these objects of our pride, because of their temporary nature, will certainly frustrate us. They will all be a source of utter disappointment, especially at the time of death. But then, despite such frustrations, again and again, we somehow or other keep working for something else. Again and again and again. Yehi samsparsha jo bhoga dukha jo naya evate atyanta vanta konteya nate shuramate buddha. Krishna gives his definition of intelligence. In this world of illusion, people have their idea of what is an intelligent man or woman. Intelligence is someone who can get very good grades in their studies in school. Or intelligence is one who has a very good sense to figure out who's cheating me, who's not cheating me, and how to somehow or other make profit even in the most difficult situations. Intelligence, one who has power to understand politics, mathematics, sociology, geography, history, science, biology, chemistry, one who understands medicine, astronomy. People who have these gifts are considered intelligent. But Krishna gives his definition of intelligence. And one who doesn't have this quality, according to Krishna, they are simply ignorant. They're ignorant fools. Abhijananti ma mudha. They are mudhas. Just like sometimes Prabhupada would call modern materialistic scientists mudhas. Fools and rascals. So sometimes devotees would, or even guests, one guest one time was saying, Prabhupada, why are you so harsh? You should not speak so harsh like this against people. Prabhupada said, it's not me speaking, it's Krishna speaking. Krishna says, Avajananti mamudha manusindhanam ashutam param bhavam ajanantam mamabhuta maheshwaram. Krishna is saying, I'm his representative. I can only repeat the words of the master. So Krishna declares all these people to be mudhas. M.A., Ph.D., presidents, CEOs. They are mudhas. They are fools, ignorant asses. according to Krishna, not according to me. In my case, it takes one to know one. I'm a fool and rascal, so. But Krishna, he is speaking because his criterion of intelligence is one who understands the temporary nature of sense gratification. One who knows that the pleasure derived from the senses with their objects, and this means both the gross senses of the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, the flesh, as well as the mind and the intelligence and the ego. Because of the temporary nature, all these pleasures bring about misery. And an intelligent man does not participate in this process of sense gratification. Knowing he's trying to find happiness, but he's getting just the opposite. Prahlad Maharaj, one of Dhruva Maharaj's beloved god brothers, he said, when he was offering his prayers, that if you want to be happy in this world, if you want to stop suffering, you have to stop trying to be happy in this world. As long as we're trying to be happy in this world, we have to suffer. All suffering is based on the desire to be happy. Anandamayo Vyashad. The soul is by nature pleasure-seeking. We find in the teachings of the Lord Buddha that the cessation of all suffering can only come about when you give up all material desires. As long as you have desire, then you have to suffer. Because all the objects that are trying to bring you happiness, they are temporary. And anything temporary, its nature is you get attached to it. And to the extent it gives you pleasure, to that extent you will become attached. And to that very extent you will suffer when it's either taken away or when it frustrates you. We are not controllers. Frustrated love is one of the greatest agonies to the heart. There's really nothing going on to your body. Someone can punch you or you can get sick. All these bodily pains, they cause great misery. But when our heart, looking for love, reposes that propensity in something or someone, and then that is frustrated, there's no greater pain. It's very intense. The death of a loved one, or the rejection of a loved one. People commit suicide over these things. They can't live, even though their body's strong and healthy. Their heart is suffering. So Buddha, his solution was nirvishesh, nirvana, shunyavadi, shunyavad. That means just no more desire. Material desire is a diseased condition. So through meditation, through right behavior, through charity, through all of these processes, through detachment, you give up desire. But anandamayo vyashat, the nature of the soul is to seek pleasure. You can't really give up desire for long. Just like if you're living, you can go to sleep for a while. But eventually you have to wake up. When you're sleeping, that's something like sunyavad. You forget everything. Deep sleep. A miserable person, even his dreams are miserable. So he wants to go into deep sleep. when he forgets everything, and then there's some rest, there's some pacification of the heart and the mind. But then you have to wake up. So similarly, the soul can enter into the sunyavad state, which is like going into deep sleep for some time, but because the soul is eternally alive, it has to wake up to consciousness again. And as soon as it wakes up to consciousness, immediately it desires ecstatic love. And as long as we're looking for it in a temporary world, then we will suffer. So the path of bhakti is the means by which we can dovetail our desires in the service of Krishna. By becoming attached to Krishna, we can become liberated in the highest state. Bilva Mangala Thakur, he prayed in this way. Now that I am serving the Supreme Lord with my heart and soul, Mukti Devi, liberation, is standing with folded hands to serve me. Liberation is a byproduct of bhakti. Param drispani vartate is the higher experience. To engage the mind and senses in the service of the Lord. Then ultimately we attain love of Krishna. That is the real love, the original love of the soul that is being fulfilled. Rupa Goswami gives the example. Young boy and young girl, they become very attracted and attached to each other in this world. And it's the source of so much problem. That same type of attachment, if it can be directed toward Krishna, it could be the source of real bliss. This material world, people are struggling hard to enjoy. This desire to enjoy sense gratification is the basic principle of all bondage. Rishabhdev explains, when you come to this human form of life, you shouldn't strive for sense gratification, because these things are available for the hogs and the dogs that eat stool. Human life has a higher purpose. And every moment of life is so precious, because life passes very fast. A moment lost can never be brought back. In the pursuit of material desires, there is war, communal violence, hatred, criminality, sin, and a whole array of sufferings. And trying to find solutions to these problems through any means except awakening our original Krishna consciousness is only perpetuating the problem. It may bring some reduction to the symptoms temporarily, but ultimately it doesn't even begin to solve the problem. The problem is the soul's fundamental need is to love God, and it cannot be satisfied without that love. It creates entire civilizations that bring about pollution and frustration. The American society is very much being worshipped by the world in general. And certainly there is more comfort, more technological facilities to enjoy than anywhere else. However, marriages, 70% are disasters. Children, by the time they become teenagers, they have no respect or even the slightest obedience to their parents. In fact, it's considered totally unfashionable to listen to your parents. You'll be ostracized by your peers if you're caught performing this great sinful activity. That's what it's like. Smoke this cigarette, take these drugs, drink this alcohol, have sex here. Do as you like. Enjoy. Be independent. And this way people's lives become crippled. Crime and the drug addiction and the alcoholism and the suicide. Frustration. Is this the goal of life? Whether you're suffering in a multi-million-dollar mansion or whether you're suffering in the street, suffering is suffering. What is the use of having all these things? So Dhruva Maharaj is explaining, one who approaches God for these cheap, temporary, material benedictions is a great fool. And Dhruva Maharaj, in his honesty, he is saying, I am such a fool. He's not blaming everyone else. He's taking responsibility himself. I'm a fallen soul. I'm ignorant. You are the husband of the goddess of fortune. And the real fortune, Lakshmi is actually the personification of bhakti. That is the fortune Lakshmi gives. Lakshmi doesn't give money. Here in India, people have this Lakshmi Puja for their businesses. Actually, they're worshipping Durga. Lakshmi has nothing to do with this material world. Lakshmi, her only business is rendering pure devotional service to Lord Narayan. And what she will bestow upon you is devotional service, if you approach her for that. If you approach her for anything else, you're approaching Durga Devi, not Lakshmi. Durga bestows material benedictions. So Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when he can give you liberation from all sufferings, the ultimate ecstasy of pure love of God, eternal residence in his own personal abode, why should we ask him for things that will only cause us frustration and misery? But yet, 99% of people go to the churches, the mosques, the masjids, and all the other homes of God to ask for these things. And when they hear about devotees, that they're asking not for any of these things, they think we're crazy. They think we're brainwashed. In the Western world, this was the idea at one time. And to some extent now, when they saw how these young people were living, when people are teenagers, in the Western world, they go wild to satisfy their senses. Yes, Purna Chandra Prabhu, you have seen. They go mad. Because teenager means your body is strong, it's full of youth, and your senses are just beginning to develop a capacity to enjoy various things. And plus, at that age, your parents can't really tell you anything anymore. So people go wild. When Prabhupada came to America, he saw people in their teens and in their 20s, they became hippies. What is hippie? Some hippies were actually seeking spiritual solutions to life. But the majority, they just rejected all normal forms of morality, considering that they're just old-fashioned hindrances to a pleasurable life. So you do anything, anytime, anywhere, with anyone, if it feels nice. Hare Krishna. So this is the condition of this world. In youth, the four Kumaras, they were intelligent. They were only 4 or 5 years old. And they had some mystic powers. So the first thing they did with their mystic powers is remain 4 or 5 years old for the entire lifespan of Lord Brahma. Srila Prabhupada explains why. He said, because they knew as soon as they became teenagers, they would go wild with material desires. And they understand a material desire only brings about frustration and ultimately death. So let me just remain 4 or 5 years old. Now, I don't know how it is in India, but I know how 4 or 5-year-old children are in America. They just want to grow up. They're just counting the days till they grow up so that they can enjoy like the other teenagers they're seeing. But the four Kumaras, they were seeing how other teenagers were enjoying, and they say, let us remain little children. Because they had intelligence. Srila Prabhupada explained that one can understand how one is recovering from an illness when the fever goes down. So similarly, one can understand how one is becoming Krishna conscious to the degree the fever of the burning desire for material enjoyment is reducing. So to ask the Supreme Personality of Godhead for such material benedictions is what Dhruva Maharaj explains, less intelligence. We're asking God, who can give us the greatest treasure of prema bhakti, we're asking him for the same things that people are getting in hellish conditions, material enjoyment. Dhruva Maharaj is properly offering prayer, because when one learns the art of offering prayers to the Lord, an essential part of it is humbling oneself before the Lord, to admit one's faults, to admit one's shortcomings. It's actually considered an offense to broadcast our own great successes and glories before a superior person. Rather, we should explain our unfortunate condition. And this is Dhruva Maharaj. Akama sarva kama ma moksha kama udarati tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham. But Krishna is so merciful that whether one is full of all material desires, whether one desires liberation, or whether one has no desires at all, if one somehow or other engages in the processes of devotional service under the proper direction of a spiritual masters, then we become purified. And gradually, we only desire pure unalloyed devotion. Krishna says in Gita that there are four kinds of pious people that approach him. Those who want wealth, those who are in suffering, those who are inquisitive, and those who are wise, who are really seeking to understand what is truth. Through the process of following the principles of bhakti, we gradually come to the platform of being wise. And from that platform only can we transcend the modes of material nature. It may be a long process to worship God for material benedictions. Eventually you're going to get purified. But it may take hundreds or thousands of births. Therefore, our acharyas are telling us, why waste this time? Sometimes by the mercy of great souls, it can be more rapid. And Vyasadeva, he wrote the scriptures in such a way to somehow or other elevate everyone to bring them closer to God. Valmiki Muni, he was hunter. And Narada Muni was so compassionate. He was so sinful, he couldn't say the name of God. So Narada told him, you are very much fond of causing death to others. Chant the name of death, Mara. So he chanted the name of death, Mara, 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 Mara. And ultimately he was tricked into chanting the name of Ram. And after a long time, wasn't a small process, if it's after some time, he gradually became purified by chanting the name of Ram. So this is the mercy of the great acharyas, to somehow or other get everyone connected to Krishna, to begin their spiritual lives. Srila Prabhupada would send devotees on Harinam Sankirtan into the streets of the big cities. I remember I was living in Vrindavan and I forgot all about material civilization. When I was sleeping on the bank of Jamuna under a kadamba tree, one time I had a dream. Now here I was. It was winter. It was the month of January. I only had one little chadar, just very simple, about like this, a little thicker, someone gave me. And I would just wrap myself up in a tight little ball, sleep right on the ground, no bed, no straw mat, nothing, just right on the ground, just to be with the dust of Braj. And I would sleep. And I would have to beg for food. I had nothing. And I was coming from a wealthy part of America. What craziness is this? So people in India, they have dreams of going to America. Yes? They have dreams of going to America. The evidence is, go in front of the American embassy. And you'll see every day there's a line about 10 blocks long, people trying to get their visas. So I was living in a nice house with telephones and televisions and cars and wealth and all these things, and I left it all, and here I was. I had one dhoti, one chadar, and a bead bag That was it. A little begging pot. And bathe. And after taking bath, I would just wring out the dhoti I had on and put it back on. There was no second. One kopan, haribo. And usually in the winter, it wouldn't even dry. The next morning when I took my bath, it was still wet. So it was a simple life. I used to be able to do those things. So one night, I'll never forget, I'm sleeping under this kadamba tree in January, freezing cold, and I had a dream. I dreamed that I was living again in the affluent, materialistically opulent society of America. I was back at my home. And in my dream, I was sleeping, and I woke up, and when I woke up, I was in America. And there were people watching television, and there was people going to athletic events, and there was people enjoying nice cars, and so many things. And I was looking around, and I was mortified. I was actually weeping in the dream, crying. What kind of fool, what kind of ignorant rascal, what kind of mood am I that I left Vrindavan to come to this wretched, horrible place? I was condemning myself. Why did I come here? What did I give up for this? I was in so much anguish, I was literally, practically on the verge of death. Then I woke up. And I looked up and there was the sky and the moon and the stars. And I started hitting myself saying, what a nonsense, why did I come back to this place of America? And I was awake. Then I saw the Jamuna. I was, what is this? This isn't the Mississippi River, this is the Jamuna. I'm in Vrindavan, I didn't leave. And then I immediately just offered my prostrated obeisances and went into the freezing water of Jamuna to take bath with tears in my eyes saying, thank you, Krishna, for saving me. I'll never forget that experience. It was a horrible nightmare. But it is explained in Shastra, Gita, that what is night for a materialist is day for a person who's aspiring for Krishna consciousness. What so many people's dream come true is what was to me the most horrible nightmare. Of course, when we understood Srila Prabhupada's teachings, then whether we're in America or whether we're in Bank of Jamuna, Swarga Pavarga Narakeshu Apitulyate Darshan, whether you're in a heavenly planet with Indra or whether you're in the hellish planets with Yamaraj, whether you're living in a palace or under a tree, it makes no difference if you're rendering devotional service. In fact, Srila Prabhupada said, if you're attached to your palace and you're not willing to live under a tree, that is material. And if you're attached to the tree and not willing to live in a palace, if you can better serve Krishna, that is material. This is Rupa Goswami's Yukta Vairagya principle. I was living in Vrindavan. My visa expired. The nightmare actually became a reality. I had to return to America. Hare Krishna. And when I first got to America, I learned that Srila Prabhupada was in New York. He was coming to New York. So I went to New York City to see Srila Prabhupada. Why in the world would anyone want to go to New York City unless you want to see Srila Prabhupada?
Well, that's a long story. The devotees at the temple in Coconut Grove in Florida that I was visiting, they said, we'll drive you. So then I said, all right. Then they said, we're not going. So I had to hitchhike there. So many days on the side of the road, wearing little dhoti and having my bead bag and a little blanket around me. Finally, I reached New York City and I had to walk through the streets in the middle of the night. Very dangerous. Finally, I got there. And the temple was locked. It was middle of the night. And I just sat on the steps. And just before the door opened, a van pulled up with all the devotees from Coconut Grove. I said, what are you doing here? He said, oh, we decided to come anyway. Anyways, the devotees were sent out on Harinam Sankirtan. First day, they sent me to Harlem with three other devotees. Harlem is a really rough ghetto, parts of it. I'm just coming from that Kadamba tree in Vrindavan, and here I am in this dangerous ghetto of New York City. And there's three of us, and we're all new devotees. There was no senior man. There was one person who was a little senior. So we're chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And this big person, huge, he was as big as any five of you put merged into one. This gigantic man. He came up to us and said, I own this block. Get off or I will kill you. And he was serious as anything. So we went to the next block. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. And in a few minutes, he came to the next block. Get off this block. I own this block. If you're not out of here immediately, I will kill you. So we went to about five or six blocks, and he followed us everywhere we went. So finally, we happened to see a police officer. And under our illusion, we were thinking, he will give us shelter. So we approached this police officer and said, Dear sir, all respect to you. You are the protector of the citizens. You know, we're citizens. And this, you see that man there? He said, yes, I see that. How can anyone not see that man there? He said, he's claiming that he owns every block we go, and he says that will kill us if we don't get off his block. Can you help us? He said, as far as I'm concerned, he does own every block in New York City. So you better get out of here, or you will be killed, and I will not help you. Very well. So we just, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And we're not allowed to come back till the evening when Prabhupada gives his lecture. It would be total maya if we came back early. That was the first day. The second day, they sent me to Times Square. Times Square recently is becoming a little bit renovated. But in those days, Times Square is 42nd Street and Broadway. Yes? Horrible. There was just massive crowds of people, just not even looking at each other, just zooming towards some kind of money or sense gratification. And there was all of these, everything illicit that we read about in the scriptures was spontaneously and simultaneously right before your eyes. There was shop. Right where we were standing doing Harinam, there was a place for betting on horse races. There was liquor stores. There was prostitution. and these obscene cinemas. There was people cooking cows and other meat right out in the open, all around. People enjoying, people walking around with cigarettes, and boys and girls holding hands, and boys holding hands. It was a crazy situation. And we're standing there, and there's a big crowd around us of all these people. And some people are curious, but other people just looking at us like we're crazy. Like, what are you doing? What? So I remember I was at this Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, and I was thinking of that Kadamba tree on the bank of the Jamuna, thinking, what am I doing here? And then I happened to see the first old friend I met since I left and came to America, an old acquaintance, and he was looking at me. There was about 150 people just in a circle around us, just looking at us. And he was one of them. And I went up and said, oh, I'm happy to see you. He said, what are you doing with these crazy people? Have you gone crazy? I said, maybe I have. And then I was thinking, as we just went on chanting, and I saw people were gradually taking books, and some people were even joining the kirtan, that this is a Vaishnava. Prabhupada didn't want us just sitting in Vrindavan. He wanted us in places like this, giving Krishna consciousness to others. That was his desire. That was his order. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur especially sent his preachers to the cities. Wherever there's the worst ignorance, that's where there's the greatest need for bhakti. This was Nityananda Prabhu's psychology. So many pious people he was preaching to, but when he saw Jagai and Madhai, this is the real opportunity to do some seva. He risked his life. Narayana parasarve nakutashtina vidyate swarga pavarga narakeshu apitulyate darshu. For a devotee, heaven, hell, city, holy place, he's simply happy rendering devotional service. Like a lotus flower, even can be in a muddy, horrible, sinful environment, but because he's preaching, because he's rendering service to Guru and Krishna, he's transcendental. Bombay. Actually, it's quite a hellish place. Of course, the nature of Maya is you become so accustomed to something hellish that you think hellish things are good. And you think good things are hellish. That's conditioning. When people actually like to live in a city, their conditioning is really in a dangerous situation. But there's so much traffic, and the trains are overcrowded, and the roads are overcrowded, and there's so much pollution, and there's so much greed, and there's the most ridiculous hoardings I've seen anywhere in the world for the cinemas here in Bombay. Unbelievable. They're so unsophisticated, uncouth, and just ridiculous. Everywhere you go, there's some person with blood all over his body and a knife in his hand and some half-naked woman smiling at him. It's horrible. In the West, they don't have like that. They're a little more sophisticated. So who would want to be here? But yet devotees, we have seen people, we're in Mayapur, we're in Vrindavan, and devotees are feeling separation from Radha Gopinath, separation from the association, separation from their service. Because they're actually experiencing Vrindavan. Because Srila Prabhupada's feet, his lotus feet, they never leave Vrindavan. The dust of Vrindavan are always upon his feet. And wherever we're serving his instruction, that's where we'll find his lotus feet. That's where we will realize the treasures of the spiritual world, even if it's in Bombay, or Black Harlem, or 42nd Street in Broadway, Times Square. If that's where we can serve Krishna by giving others Krishna consciousness, that's where we want to be. That's where the lotus feet of Guru and Krishna will be realized. There's a story. Is there time for a story? Purnachandra Prabhu? Sure. All these scholarly Vaishnavas are here and I'm just like a psychotic frog. I just jump around and speak all kinds of croaking sounds. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after taking sannyas, he was in Santipur, and there he was requested by the devotees to go to Jagannath Puri to make his residence. During his travels to Puri with his associates, he came to a very holy place called Chhatrabhog. Chhatrabhog is considered a great place of pilgrimage because there is a place there where the Ganges divides into 100 mouths. The stream of the Ganges. And the story of that place is very interesting. Long ago, according to the Puranas, King Bhagirath, in order to deliver his ancestors, he worshipped Ganga Devi. And by his devotion, he actually brought Ganga from the heavenly planets to the earth. But first it came on the head of Lord Shiva, and then it came to the earth. So Lord Shiva, he was feeling intense separation from Goddess Ganga. So he came to Chhatrabhog, and upon seeing the Goddess Ganga, he wanted to worship her with such love. And how do we worship Mother Ganga? We worship by taking our bath in her and offering oblations and prayers. So he was in the Ganga, and he was so immersed in love and devotion for Ganga Devi that in order to completely immerse himself in worshiping Ganga, his body turned into water and he mixed with the Ganga. That's how much he was absorbed in his worship. So from that time, that place is called Ambulinga Ghat, where Lord Shiva became water and merged with Ganga Devi. Maintained his separate identity in spirit, but his body merged with Ganga Devi. So by taking bath there, we simultaneously get the purifying benediction of both Lord Shiva and Goddess Ganga. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to that ghat, and in great ecstasy he took his bath there. After taking his bath at Ambulinga Ghat, he was crying out, "O Jagannath, O Jagannath, where are you?" He was on his way to Puri. He was so eager to see Lord Jagannath
The only words out of his mouth was, "Oh Neelachandra, oh Jagannath, when will I see you? When will I see you?" He was weeping. He was weeping, such torrents of tears. What the devotees and all the people who gathered around witnessed was a great wonder. That here was Ambulinga Tirtha, where the Ganges is divided into 100 streams. And here was Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and his eyes had 100 streams of constantly flowing, torrential tears flowing from them. There was a governor of that province whose name was Ramchandra Khan. It is said that he was very much attached to sense gratification. But he was also a devotee. And what is the nature of a devotee who's attached to sense gratification? He wants Krishna to supply sense gratification. He saw Lord Chaitanya weeping. Mahaprabhu was weeping in such ecstasy that his limbs were trembling, he was perspiring, he was palpitating. His complexion was changing colors, his hairs were standing on end, and he was just crying out in a piteous voice, "Oh Jagannath, oh Jagannath," in separation. Ramchandra Khan, seeing Lord Chaitanya in this state, he began to cry. His heart melted. He called out, "Is there any way to stop this person from weeping? Is there any way to pacify this person's heart?" In the entire three worlds, no one has ever wept like this personality is weeping. And that was a fact. So he offered his prostrated obeisances at the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya asked the governor, "Who are you?" The governor replied, "I am the servant of your servants." Then the local people said, "He's actually the governor of this southern province." Lord Chaitanya said, "Oh, you are the governor? Then tell me, what is the fastest way to find Lord Jagannath?" Very important principle here. Here was a governor. That means he had very high political contacts. The only thing Lord Chaitanya wanted from him was the fastest way to Jagannath. The governor said that, "You want to go to Jagannath Puri? It's very dangerous. There's rival kings in these provinces of Bengal, and they're fighting like anything. They're having war. And at this time, if you go by any path, the kings have put tridents in the ground under bushes. You step on them, you'll be killed. And he has soldiers and guards everywhere. And any pilgrim who they catch, they declare to be a spy, and they torture them and kill them. It's a very inauspicious time to go to Puri." Lord Chaitanya, he was just weeping and crying, "Oh Jagannath, oh Jagannath, when will I see Jagannath? I want to see Jagannath." So the governor, his heart melted so much. He said, "Although I will have to risk my life,
I will arrange for you to go to Puri. My noble birth, my wealth, my very life have absolutely no meaning if I'm not willing to render this service to you, my Lord. He said, I will arrange for you to go to Puri. He was willing to risk his life, his wealth, his position in society, everything, to serve the Lord and his devotees. When he made that commitment from his heart, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was pleased and glanced upon him. And upon receiving that glance, he became completely purified of all of his material desires. He became a Mahabhagwat. Here was a person who had so many material desires. Religious man, but materialistic. But because he was willing to risk his life and give up everything, his noble birth, his position in society, all of his wealth, and his very life for the service of the Lord reciprocated, not by giving him wealth or position or fame or long life. He gave him his glance, and with that glance, he purified him of all his material desires and all of his material attachments. Ramchandra Khan became a great devotee. He requested Lord Chaitanya, please come to my house for prasad. So Lord Chaitanya came to his house. And Lord Chaitanya was so eager to see Lord Jagannath that he was eating in name only. It was just a formality. His ecstasy was his nourishment. And right in the middle of the meal, he just washed his hands and said, Kirtan, Kirtan. And Mukunda began to sing Kirtan. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to dance. And all the devotees began to dance. They were chanting very loudly,
Krishna, 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 Krishna.
Soon all the people of Chatrabhog gathered around and they were all seeing the beautiful dance of Sri Gauranga in Harinam Sankirtan. And they all became transformed until the entire night passed in Harinam Kirtan. When it was just before the end of the night, Ramchandra Khan had a boat waiting at a ghat near the Ganges. And he told Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is the only way to get to Puri. He provided all the facilities and necessities on that small boat with a boatman. Risked his life and everything to make these arrangements for the Lord. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him to go home to always remember Krishna. So the boat ride began. It was still dark. They're going along the Ganga. And Mahaprabhu told Mukunda to have kirtan. So they were having kirtan. Mahaprabhu was dancing in the boat, loudly roaring the holy names. The boatman was terrified. He said, tonight we will all give up our lives. There is no possibility of survival. He said, You don't know where we are. This place is dangerous. On both sides of this river are jungles where there are unlimited, deadly, man-eating tigers. And tigers swim, too. He said, in this part of the river, there are unlimited man-eating crocodiles. We should be silent. We don't want to awaken their attention. And on both sides of the river, there are the enemy king soldiers. If they find any pilgrim, it is their principle to torture them until they die. So please stop this loud singing. So devotees were sensitive to his concerns, and they all stopped singing. They're flowing through the Ganga in a small boat just before the sun rises. Very quiet, absolute silence. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Mahaprabhu roared like a lion. Why have you stopped the Harinam Sankirtan? Do you not know that if we are chanting the holy names of Krishna, Krishna's Sudarshan Chakra is in front of this boat to protect us? We have nothing to fear. Krishna always protects his devotees. Loudly chant the holy name. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to teach the world through this incident that we should have nothing to fear if we are serving Krishna. The only thing a devotee fears is forgetting Krishna. Because in rendering loving service to Krishna, in life or death, we have Krishna. In this way, Mahaprabhu proceeded through the dangerous kingdoms of Bengal until he came to Prayagat at the border of Orissa. All the while, even in the daylight, instead of hiding from the tigers, the crocodiles, and the soldiers, they were just dancing and chanting on this little boat. So this story of Ramchandra Khan shows how even if one has so many material desires, somehow if we can please Krishna by our service attitude, then he will purify us of all desires. And this is the story of Dhruva Maharaj. He approached the Lord with intensely materialistic motives. But because of his association with Narada Muni, he taught him the process of purification. And within hardly 5 months, he became completely purified of all material desires. And he is standing face to face with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And with great shame and sorrow in his heart, he's confessing that I'm such a fool. I actually approached you for material sense gratification. Approaching you for the broken glasses of the wealth and power of this world, but you have given me the rare diamond. of pure devotional service. Thank you very much.
Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.
Hare Krishna.